Next on The Balanced Word.
Whenever religion uses politics and politics uses religion, both lose. But religion usually loses sooner. It destroys religion, and then it ends up destroying politics too. That is the history of the world. If you study history, you will see this over and over again. A power-hungry leader wanting to use religion as their excuse to do what they want to do to gain power, and then a religious system that so desperately wants to fit in and belong in society that they sell out their principles in order to support an evil leader. Religion will always lose in that kind of a deal. It always does. Ultimately, politics will too, though.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this is The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. Dave is the pastor at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel, where our broadcast originates. As we continue our chapter-by-chapter study of Revelation today, we've reached yet another segment that is sometimes difficult to think about and to study. There's no question that society today continues to sink to new lows when it comes to sin and acceptance of sin. It's another sign that we're living in the last days. And today we'll begin a look at Revelation chapter 17 and the continuing judgment of man by God during the tribulation period. Pastor Dave has noticed the failure of human government in this section of Scripture.
Politics and religion, especially together, really don't mix. They're both volatile subjects in and of themselves. Just to talk about spiritual things or just to talk about political things, either one has the potential to blow up on you. But when you combine the two, it's positively toxic. In fact, just about every war that has ever been fought throughout history was in some way religious agendas mixed with political agendas, and it always blows up. It always injects some sort of passion, undue passion, into something that's really all about who gets to run things. As we've been studying the book of Revelation, as we're coming toward the end of it, we find out that the ultimate annihilation of civilization as we know it and the ultimate destruction of our world is going to be caused by an unholy alliance between a religious structure and a political structure getting together and ultimately bringing down the world. And we can see this clearly in Revelation chapter 17. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to Revelation 17. And I'll just warn you in advance that some of you may be just disturbed by this discussion, or you just may think, oh, this is crazy, and feel totally free to walk out. People did first service, so I'm cool with that. It's just the Bible. Sorry, we're moving through Revelation and I have to deal with what it deals with. Just a little background. The book of Revelation is ultimately the revelation of Jesus Christ. We are to see things about Jesus that we wouldn't see otherwise as we go through this telling of how ultimately civilization is going to come to an end. The book of Revelation, including most of which, is about a future time called the tribulation. It's a time of judgment and trouble and death and destruction and all that. Ultimately, what that process is it's Jesus allowing the world to collapse on itself so that he can rebuild an environment that is actually suitable for eternity. Now here in Revelation chapter 17, John has a vision of a woman, a wealthy prostitute, who represents a world religious system that's in existence in the last days. And she uses political power for her benefit, and the political powerhouses use religion and this religious structure as a way of bringing about their own purposes. Ultimately, the politicians win and discard the religion, but that's kind of what happens here, and then finally everything else falls apart. So Revelation 17, the basic vision is in the first six verses. It says, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead, a name was written, Mystery Babylon, the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement." So this is what he saw. There is a woman who is a harlot. Now, it's not unusual at all for God to depict his people as being a bride. In fact, in the book of Revelation, we see this ultimate celebration of the marriage supper of the Lamb. But throughout the Bible, prostitution is often used as an image of those who take religion and sell it out for the purpose of financial gain, for the purpose of, you know, political gain and whatever. And so this harlot that is being depicted here that's really wealthy is probably representative of a religious system that will exist in the last days. Organized religion, once you take all the true believers in Jesus Christ out of the picture. And the beast, we already know who the beast is because it's talked about him before. We've seen it. He is the one that we call the beast, or we call him the Antichrist, this world leader who takes over political power. Now, the beast and the woman, politics and religion, both have the same end ultimately in mind. And next Sunday, as we get into Revelation chapter 18, we see that it's all about business ultimately. It's all about profit. It's all about things. Profit is what drives organized religion, and profit is what drives organized politics. It's all about that ultimately, which is one of the reasons why it caves in itself. And so here this woman is, you know, well, if you're going to really take over the world today, one of the biggest obstacles to that is that there are these religious zealots. And it's not just Christians. There are three major world religions, really, that are all at odds against each other. You have Christianity, you have Islam, and you have Judaism. It affects a lot less people, but a lot of very influential people. So if someone really wanted to take power, what they'd want to do is there a way that I can make an amalgamation of all of these religions and help them to get along, help them to coexist? Now, if you take out people who, which I believe during the tribulation, they've been removed, most of the people who believe in Jesus and are really motivated by him, now what's left, and believe me, if I'm right about the rapture removing the true believers from the earth, and then the only real Christians left being those who get saved and are martyred, don't think because of that that churches are going to suffer greatly. In fact, I think most churches will flourish once you get the true believers out. Because it's like, good, now all those narrow-minded, bigoted people are removed, and finally we can get along with everyone. So if you want to be a world ruler, one of the greatest ways to do it would be to bring, for instance, peace to the Middle East. And the way that you could do that is to find a way, a faith system that's compatible with Islam, you know, with Christianity, with Judaism. Now, you might say, that's never going to happen. But if you think about it, with all of the, for instance, extremism within Islam, the extremists represent a small portion of all the people who say they follow Islam. Of all the people who are looking at this extremism going, this is nuts, seems like they would be totally open to somebody who go, oh, you can still be a Muslim. You just don't have to blow yourself up for it. And for Christians, oh, you can still be a Christian, just Be loving and accepting of everyone. Can't we all just get along? And so it's a brilliant move on the part of the beast to be able to somehow bring this all together in a way that can bring peace. And apparently this happens for 3.5 years until the beast decides, you know what? Forget this stupid watered down religion. I am religion. I am the leader. And then he turns on everyone who does not acknowledge him as God. So before, as long as they acknowledge him as the leader, they could have their own God, they're okay. Any religion would be. But eventually what happens is it blows up on everyone, and it always does. But here we see this religious system, and she is riding the beast. She thinks she's in control. She thinks, boy, we have so much political power, us religious people, us good, you know, we're not really religious, we're more spiritual than we are religious. And we all kind of share the same agenda. She thinks she's riding the beast, but the beast is going to end up destroying her ultimately, and it always works out that way. From verse 7 on, we see an explanation of all of these characters, several characters, and without going through all those verses, what we see about the woman, the religious system, is she's unfaithful. In other words, and throughout the Bible, somebody who takes a faith in God and then sells it out for pragmatism, for compromise, they're often, the image of a harlot is often used in that kind of case, and it is here. So spiritually compromised, for sale to the highest bidder, I can be bought, I can turn my powers and my forces into your best interests as long as you're going to pay me well. The people that everyone hates, and you can read about it later in here, it says that she, you know, this woman and the beast can't stand the ones whose names are written in the book of life. She is, in verse 6, drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And the beast fools everyone whose name isn't in the book of life. So the ones that she hates are those intolerant people who are following Jesus and just won't play by the political rules. They will not be politically correct. They will not compromise their principles. The woman's wealthy. The woman's connected to a city on 7 hills. Gee, I wonder where that could be. Rome has traditionally always been considered the city that's built on 7 hills. So Rome is tied in here, as is the Roman Empire politically. It flows through. If you read Daniel chapter 7, you'll see that. Now, right away, people will go with this and be like, see, it's the Catholic Church. Well, not so fast, because if it is the Catholic Church, and it certainly may be connected to some of the assets of the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church is incredibly wealthy, and the vast majority of their holdings are hid there beneath the Vatican, but in terms of artwork and everything else. But think about the Catholic Church. If everyone in the Catholic Church who actually believes in Jesus, who actually believes that he's God, that he died for our sins, rose from the dead, if you remove those people from the Catholic Church, what's left? The same thing that's going to be left in every other church, just the stuff. And some of the most aggressive and ambitious people who are left are now running things. And so this woman is sort of centered because all the issues are going on in that part of the world. She's also called Babylon, but it's probably not connected to the original Babylon in Iraq, just the idea of Babel and the idea of getting people together. That was the agenda of Babel. But she also has great relationships with kings and leaders. She is connected with the beast, who's the ultimate political leader. She's also connected with these other 10 heads, which are described as 10 kings, as we'll talk about in a moment. They all end up hating her. They all end up scorning her. But she's more than willing to play them for what she wants, giving them what they want. Ultimately, she fails, as will any compromising religion in a skirmish against politicians. Now, the beast, we already know about him because we've read about him in previous chapters. But if you look at verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition, to hell. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. You remember before, we saw the prediction that this beast would come to power, and he would, in Daniel and in Revelation, that he would, during the middle of this seven-year period, would turn on the Jewish people in particular, would go against them by declaring that he himself is God. And he somehow gets a head wound that looks to be mortal, and yet miraculously the devil comes along and strengthens him and helps him, and it's almost like he came back from the dead. And now he becomes really popular, and he becomes really angry and mean. Riding the crest of his great victory over his head wound, he thinks that now he is indestructible, and now he doesn't need religion anymore. He's in control of whoever rides him. He's controlling the woman. She thinks she's controlling him. He's also tied in with other historical leaders. You see in verses 10 and 11, there are also seven kings. Five have fallen. In other words, five of these kings have already come and gone. One is, that's at the time that John's writing, so it would be the Roman emperor of the time. And the other has not yet come. This is in the future. And when he comes, he must continue a short time. The beast that was and is not is himself also the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going to perdition. So the beast is in coordination with, ultimately, you know, the history of monarchies. The history of rulers is like one after another. And in Daniel chapter 7, you can read about this laying out of the Babylonian Empire and the Medo-Persian Empire and so on, all the way through to the prediction of the Roman Empire after the Greeks, and then the collapse of the Roman Empire. But then in the future, somebody who's like a toe on the foot of the Roman Empire ends up becoming this ultimate leader. So the idea here is this beast is someone who is connected to every dictator that there ever was, every kingdom that ever exists. They pick seven of them because seven is a number that depicts completion or the total picture. So there have been a lot more rulers that followed after those others. There are people, whether like, you know, Hitler and others, who they deserve to be in this too. All that he's saying is the beast is like coming after these guys. He's like them, but in a way, he's an eighth one. He's the seventh, but he's more than the seventh because he gets his fresh start. He also helps motivate other potential leaders, these kings that they've been talking about. He's anti-God, he's anti-Christ. And again, anti as a prefix doesn't actually mean against, as we sometimes use it. Anti means instead of. So he wants to take the place of Christ and God. And the beast is completely disloyal. He's loyal only to himself. He will turn on the other leaders. He will turn on God's people. He will turn on this prostituted religious system. It's just who he is. So we have these historical leaders. They hate the woman as well. We also have 10 horns that he says are 10 kings. Beginning with verse 12 and on through, he says, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom yet. These are guys who want to be rulers. They are the toadies to the beast. They don't have their kingdom, but they want one. And they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. He goes, yeah, it's me and you. You're my guys. You're with me. These are of one mind. They only want one thing, and will give their power and authority to the beast. They will end up making war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. Those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. And then he said, you saw the waters where the harlot sits, their people, multitudes, nations, and tongues, and the 10 horns which you saw in the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. So these 10 leaders, They're really just like every other bureaucrat that ever lived, but they're getting together, linking up with the beast, knowing that he's a monster, but feeling at the same time that they have something to gain. Ultimately, these other toadies are no better than the religious system that sells out to the beast. They just want power, and they just want, ultimately, it's good for business, as we will see in the next chapter. And they all use the harlot and then discard the harlot. The other people that we see in this chapter are the saints and the martyrs. The harlot is a part of their martyrdom. She sells them out. She is drunk on their blood. The one thing about these people that's such a threat to the system, it's like, hey, everybody's playing together. It's the world is one. Except for these people who are the only ones, the people who have, at their own peril, received Jesus Christ. And they're like, I'm not impressed by the beast. And it says, everybody was impressed by him, except these saints and these martyrs. Ultimately, they are said to be victorious. They're said to be chosen. They're said to be faithful, but they are also said to die. So those are the characters, and that's essentially what happens is this pseudo-religious entity that uses the language and symbolism and wealth of Christianity combined with the wealth and the symbolism of the other religions as well, they get together, the beast takes it as far as he can, and then spoils it, ruins it, and he will be destroyed almost immediately after she is destroyed because he is as much of a harlot as she is. Whenever religion uses politics and politics uses religion, both lose, but religion usually loses sooner.
Today on The Balanced Word, we listened into a portion of Pastor Dave Rolfe's study in Revelation. You can hear it again when you visit us online at thebalancedword.com. And there we house our recent radio programs. Again, thebalancedword.com. Pastor Dave has taught through the entire Bible, and we thought it would be helpful to you to offer that Through the Bible set on a USB. We'd be happy to send this to you for a donation of $30 or more to The Balanced Word. It's your generosity that allows us to bring the teaching of God's balanced word to the radio every day. So thank you for standing with us, with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. If you'd like to get behind what we're doing, please call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Through the Bible USB. That's 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. Here at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel, we offer two Sunday morning services. They begin at 8 and 10. Pastor Dave always enjoys meeting and greeting his radio listeners, so be sure to say hi after service. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And those outside the area can live stream there too. That's ccpacifichills.org. All right, let's get back into the study now. Here's Pastor Dave once again to explain why Christianity and politics doesn't mix well.
The backbone of politics, you see, is deal-making and compromising. The whole way that politics works is selling out, making deals, making trades, trying to find a way to create the best deal that we can, where no one totally gets what they want, but we all actually get what we actually want. We were pretending we wanted more just so that we would have room to motivate. If the backbone of politics is compromise and deal making, the backbone of Christianity is uncompromising truth. It is saying we believe in absolute truth. We believe what God says. We believe that there is one way to be saved, and that is through Jesus Christ. And I'm sorry if that offends people. I'm sorry if it's not considered, you know, politically expedient. I'm sorry if there are some people who are going to want to kill us because that's what we believe. Christianity is founded on absolute historical truth. And that makes it incompatible with a compromise. That's why Christianity ultimately, in its truest form, cannot coexist. Oh, we don't have to go out there and destroy other faiths, but sorry, we can't join you. we believe that there is only one way to salvation, and it's not a little bit of everything. We aren't people who are just like, well, you know, I'm not religious, I'm just spiritual, and everybody who's spiritual, it's great. We believe in absolute freedom for people to believe what they want, but if we are Christians, we believe the truth, and that truth cannot be negotiated, it can't be watered down, and it can't be compromised, or it begins to lose its character as epistemology, as what we know as truth.
More about the failure of human government next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Roth, a presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up.